Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 23, part 2 of 2, Dutch talk show B&W on benzodiazepines from 2002, featuring Haley and Emma. And today, it's July 17th, 2023. In the episode description, you will find the names of the people that were on the TV show and how Haley, Emma S., and I refer to them when we're discussing them. Hi, Haley and Emma. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for making the time. So we all saw the talk show, the Dutch talk show that I translated. And we're going to discuss it. And one of the first guests on the show, we call her Mrs. C. What is your opinion on her situation, Haley?
I mean, she's very obviously addicted or dependent, actually, rather, like on these benzodiazepines. She says repeatedly, like, this is one of the quotes that I pulled out, like, where she's like, sometimes I try it, but I can't get it done, when she was asked about like stopping taking it. And I'm just like, yeah, because you're dependent. Like that's the definition right there. And it struck me because she said like her husband had all those heart attacks and stuff, and then he died at 68. And I was like, that's 21 years in between. So even he was fine for 21 years and he didn't need this stuff, but you still took it. You know, like, why is that? Because you're dependent. So I think she's just kind of in a lot of denial. She seems okay, though. You know, like, she doesn't seem any worse for the wear, I have to say. I'm a little jealous of that. But, like, they don't seem to be affecting her as negatively as they did me, you know. But I don't know, like, what her life is like outside of this talk show and what kind of face she's putting on, too. So... but yeah, she says she can't sleep. She can't sleep without it. And like, it's impossible for her to sleep without it. And I was like, well, that's a dependence, you know, yeah, like if you definitely can't get it done, then that's that.
Definitely. How about you, Emma? What did you think of this old lady?
Yeah, I thought, wow, you know, she's not got any like horrendous symptoms. I mean, she's been taking it for so long. I guess the only thing she has got is that she can't sleep. Like Haley was saying, like, you know, she cannot sleep without it. And I thought it was really sad because, you know, of course you're going to feel alone, you know, whilst everything's going with her husband, and then she's alone again. And it was this fear of being alone. And that's why she went to the doctor, because I think she says that, like, well, I was alone again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like people just need somebody to talk to. They don't need a pill to make them feel less alone. You know, it's kind of just messed up.
Yeah.
That's what I took from her. And I also had the jealousy. I was like, wow, you took it for that long and you didn't get any, you know, anything bad happening to you.
Yeah, some people are seemingly okay.
Yeah, I kind of had some of the same thoughts, but about like her and like the other guest, where it's like they're going through all of this shit and it's difficult shit, you know, and... I just don't know if like we're doing anyone a service by like denying them like working through those emotions in like a healthy way, and we're just going to go ahead and blunt them instead. Like she's dealing with her husband and everything, like you said, instead of going to therapy and, you know, working through all of this, working through like her difficulty being alone and like working through her anxiety, probably around her husband's health, and then working through like the grief. Like she just chooses not to experience it instead. And I don't know what that actually really does to people's minds and everything when they never actually like work through an issue like that and cope.
Right. Well, exactly. I wonder, like, in 2002, like, we didn't know about the dangers. She probably doesn't know about the dangers. Yeah. And I think personally I can relate to her. Because I don't blame her, because A, she doesn't know how bad it is. And B, I think she genuinely thinks that it's helping her, because if she doesn't take it, and she tried though, like, why is she trying to go without it? But then every time she tries, she doesn't sleep, which is total, you know, it makes total sense because she's dependent now. She won't be able to sleep. And I think in her case, even if there would be a guru of wisdom, someone convincing her, in terms of her age, I'm not really sure if it's worth it for her to do a taper.
Right.
But then again, you know, there's always the possibility that tolerance happens and she stops sleeping altogether and she needs more in the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. And well, she starts having like all the horrific things that can happen to you, you know, right. All of a sudden.
Or scary. She had said her doctor had asked her to reduce her dose. And what happens if she gets a different doctor and that doctor's not as cooperative as the one that she has? You know what I mean? Like, and then she's cut. That's the big danger that I see, especially happening with older people, is them just getting like denied it because like it does increase all those things, like you're saying, Emma, the risks to the elderly. Like, and I do wonder about that. Like she was asked to reduce the dose. Like, what if her doctor asks her to reduce the dose another time and just kind of does it for her? What if he doesn't ask next time? What if he just tells her? So that's always a risk when you're dependent on something. Like,
And then maybe you've got the doctor saying like, well, we're not going to give it to you anymore.
Right. You're at the mercy of whoever's care you're in then. Personally, I hate that feeling. So
me too.
Yeah. My doctor is older and I'm just like, you just got to make it to the end of my taper, man. Like, don't retire. Don't die. You know, I need you just until like I get to here at least, you know,
don't die. Yeah. Don't die.
Definitely. And then after Mrs. C speaks, we get, we call her Dr. B. I was very much impressed by seeing this in 2002. What was your opinion, Haley, on this Dr. B?
I was shocked at like just how much of the information like she knew then that it feels like we're just still figuring out now. So it's kind of shocking to me that we're still figuring it out now. Like, she's just so on the money. Like, the new black box warning that came out is completely in line with everything she's saying. Like, the studies that she quotes about, like, they should only be taken 2 to 4 weeks. They're ineffective for longer than that. They have withdrawal symptoms. You know, if you take them for too long. And I was like, that's the new black box warning. 20 fucking years later, we finally get exactly what she's already saying 20 years ago. So like she's totally a beautiful angel. And completely right. And she's sweet. But like, yeah, it was more shocking to me that like, it's just like, we knew this. We knew this enough that like someone on a Dutch talk show is talking about it 20 years ago. And it's kind of every time I see something like that, I get angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my big question is, she's referring or she's mentioning scientific research. I'm wondering what it was, because the Ashton Manual, I think it came out in 99, revised in 2002, something like that. And I'm wondering, because the internet wasn't really big or thing yet, I wonder if she did get the information from the Ashton Manual, but I guess we'll never know. Emma, what was your take on her?
I was exactly the same. She actually looked like a little angel sitting there, you know, doesn't she? Looks like an angel. Mm-hmm. And yet again, just like the shock of like, oh wow, she it's like she's been through, well, not been through it herself, but she knows a lot. And I love that. I loved, for me, it was what she was saying about, you know, when everyone calls you an addict, and actually for me throughout the whole thing, addict, addict, addict. And as soon as someone says addict, you just immediately think that they're taking it to get high, they're using it, they're, you know, it's a completely different thing. And then she says, no, dependent, you're dependent. And she really is clear on that. And I like that about her. She was very clear. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, for me as
we're
a Dutchie.
Not addicts.
Yeah, for me as a Dutchie, this is the first person that actually spoke like that about benzos that I've ever seen in the whole medical community. My whole journey, this was like,
yeah,
like she existed or she exists. Like, wow, like, oh my god,
where was she? What?
Yeah.
You know, like, where has she been?
Where were you? Yeah. Why didn't I see that talk show like when I was 19 and be like, okay, I think I need to stay away from the benzodiazepines. I do wonder though, because she does list a lot of side effects. I'm kind of missing the death and seizures and becoming psychotic, but I mean, she had a lot of the side effects.
She says like, doesn't she? She says incontinence and a few things, and I'm like, well, I was way more than incontinent. I thought I was Hitler. I actually thought I was Hitler.
I was in the realm of eternal darkness. I was in hell, like burning alive, and no sleep. It was just dark,
burning
the void. Yeah.
Yeah. She does mention insomnia and stuff. And I do think, like, she mentions that I got the feeling that the side effects she was mentioning were, like, really directed at Mrs. C, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're calling her. Because of her age and everything, you know, like falls and whatever. So, like, maybe that's why. But.
Right.
And I mean, I think psychosis.
Like, she's like mentioning things that would affect someone like that's older, like even without the withdrawal, just things that can happen to you, like even if you don't feel like withdrawal.
And from a Dutch point of view, because she mentions the cost that it costs society, I can't remember the amount, but she was saying like millions, hundreds of millions of euros.
300 million euros. Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah. And the Dutch system is basically we all have to pay health insurance every month. We're obligated to do so. So we're all pitching in for medical care. So that's why she mentions that. So. Just for reference to our international listeners. Mm. And then we get to Dr. Thomas. Dr. Thomas.
So, is he the bald guy?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. So Haley, lots.
I have feelings about Dr. Thomas. Yeah, I really do. God. I really, really do. Like, he's just so fucking dismissive of everything. Mm. And like, he seems to be like in this dreamland. Where he's like, oh, that like she's fine, like she takes it every night and she's fine, and I'm like, she can't not take it though. You missed that part. And then the other part that got me personally was when he's like, oh well, like it's like pretty rare to like fall and break a hip, so like a small increase on a small like risk. And I was just like, oh my god, my mom made an entire career out of taking care of people who had either fallen and broken a hip or might fall and break a hip. Like, she took care of elderly people. Like, walkers and canes and wheelchairs exist because of this risk that's already there. So I think like he downplayed that risk like big time, just in general, in order to like minimize how like benzos would increase that. And it's just like, like, you talked to me a little bit earlier, like, I couldn't wake up early, you know, like, of course it's going to increase your fall risk if you're already unsteady. Mm-hmm. So, like, he got me there just because, like, my mom worked in elder care and everything, and I've just seen so many, like, old people in my life that, like, she's had to care for, and I was like, this is not a small risk. Mm-hmm. You get to a certain age, and it's your biggest risk.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah.
100%.
And Emma, what about you when you saw Thomas or her Thomas?
Oh my God. He's like, he reminds me, he really triggers me. He reminds me of all the bloody NHS doctors I've spoken to. I mean, one that I spoke to recently that I did the little video about on Instagram, because it's just like you were saying, Haley, completely different reality. Don't know where he is. He's sort of just deciding to ignore the horror that's in front of him and these people sat around that are all explaining how awful these drugs are. The thing that really got me was that he said more anxious people are more likely to like need these drugs and like not be able to function without them.
There hadn't been a comparison between people who are anxious falling weren't on drugs and people that are anxious that are on the drugs falling. And I'm like, what?
What? And it's just like, what is that? Like,
yeah.
And also, everyone's anxious. You know, there's.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
Everyone.
I think what I really hated about him was that he was stating that some people are just anxious, restless people that are in need of these drugs.
Right.
But no, they just need to talk to somebody or get some therapy or some whatever they need. They do not need these drugs. Mm-hmm. I hated him saying that because he was also, it made it seem like anxious people were like, they have something wrong with them.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like it was like a negative thing. So this whole it's like the way doctors speak to you, like, oh, it's clearly your mental health disorder coming to the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah. And he was kind of like gaslighting Dr. B, like, you know, I was like, what? Like, no, you're in need of some correction. This isn't true. That isn't true. Blah, 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 blah. I was just.
That's when I think she does come back and correct him, though, with like, no, like all these things cost like this dollar amount a year, like mic drop.
I loved it when she said that.
I know. She was just like, no, there are these studies, like, you know, like you should maybe read them sometime.
Yeah, I think she stood tall versus him.
And you were so right, Naftal. He did completely gaslight her and say, I think you're pulling numbers out of the air or something like that, didn't he?
Yes.
Like, uh-huh. Well, is she really? What the hell?
Yeah, he just did not believe her. But, you know, like she's an addiction specialist and he's some professor of medicine. So obviously.
Professor of, what was it? General.
Practitioners,
yeah.
So it's
stuck in his ways.
Yeah, I got the video from YouTube, and obviously there's comments in Dutch, and there were people stating that he was clearly advocating for big pharma.
100%.
Oh yeah.
Everyone hated his guts. Everyone hated his guts.
That's good to know.
So I think everyone that will.
I have more to say about him once we get further along.
Go ahead.
No, because we got to introduce like the other guests and everything first.
Okay. Well, there's only one more guest that comes up, and that is Mrs. N.
Yeah.
Was a terror to translate because she's got a regional accent, but I pulled it off. So, okay, I have a lot to say about this too, but you start, Emma, with the last lady who was it prescribed Ativan.
Oh my God, it was Ativan.
Lorazepam, she was on Lorazepam. She says it Temesta or something, but I looked it up and it's just Lorazepam, Ativan, you know, all of these brand names, these fucking brand names, but it's Ativan. She was on a lot of Ativan.
Mm-hmm. I think that for me, the general sense was that she, you know, her husband was like, my wife is back after 20 years of taking these drugs and how much it had affected her and blunted her and changed her as a person. Like, and then that horrible bald doctor, I don't know what his name, Mr. something.
Thomas?
Mr.
Thomas,
you know, and he's there listening to that. And it's like, hello, you know, there's the proof, like somebody's life, 20 years of somebody's life. So yeah. And I think she was a great example of somebody who had managed to come off it and was better. Mm-hmm. And was living life and was like, oh my God, I'm alive again.
Yeah, totally. You know? Totally. What about you, Haley?
What struck me like with her story, I mean, because I was on Ativan too. So I was like, it's kind of like we're like in the same like club here. But also her deciding to stop taking the medication happened like in a very similar way as me. And this is where I kind of hated this Thomas fellow, his response to it or whatever, was she got the information, you know, like she listened to something or read something or watched something.
A TV show.
Okay, so she watched a TV show and got the information that these drugs like can do this, 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 and this. And she was like, oh my God, that's me. And I'm going to get off of these medications now. And then her life has improved. So it wasn't like Dr. Thomas tries to make it sound like she's an addict, you know, the way like someone's like a heroin addict or something on the street. Cause he literally says, we see these people on the street and so compares her to like a homeless, you know, like drug addicted person who's like willing to sacrifice everything, you know, just to have this drug, just to have this high, where she's just like, no, I felt horrible. These weren't really helping. And then like, I saw this information And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll get off of these medications and like everything will improve. And then it did. And like, yeah, that's where I come back to Thomas being like the woman that's sitting next to you, Mrs. C, is saying she can't go a day without it, but she's not the addict to you. But the woman who managed to get off this medication based on just learning a fact, she's the addict to you. Very, like, I don't know, like it just, that got me. But yeah. I like, it's amazing to me, considering when this was, that she was so successful. Like, I can't imagine doing this without, like, the information that we have now on the internet, without, like, support from other people going through it. Like, it's just impressive to me that she was so successful back then.
Totally, totally. What kind of struck me was she had some traumas. She had birth to a severely disabled child, and there was a car accident with her husband. But she basically, I felt like, I know, you know, it felt to me like she was force fed the Ativan. It was like really the doctor telling her, you need to be on this drug. You need to take this drug. And when she wanted to come off, her then prescriber was like, that, I don't think that's a good idea. So in the end, she switched doctors. So the doctors pushing her, the lorazepam or Ativan, that was like really intense to me. And also the 20 years. Kind of like awakening after 20 years of being just drugged up, like severely drugged up, because she was just asking more and more and needing more and more. I don't know. She doesn't really tell us how much Ativan she was on, but we all know how potent it is. I do wonder though, because she kind of like shares that she was really sick and she needed to be with family to support her. But I'm like, I wonder what her symptoms were and how bad it was. She doesn't really share that. But I just, I felt a lot for her. Like, you poor woman, you poor woman.
Yeah. And it's like she says, you know, oh, the doctor thinks that I'm not going to cope and my family aren't going to cope. And it's like, well, why is that? Why is that then? It's probably because the withdrawal she's experiencing, trying to get off these pills, she was like saying, I'm having panic attacks. And again, all of this stuff is definitely caused by the medication. And then you've got Thomas there who's just listening and thinking, yeah, it's her mental health condition. You know, it's like, it's like, it's the pill that's caused this. And, you know, she wasn't like this before. And then he says something really mean. He says, like, I think what you were saying, Hayley, you know, oh, she was given the information, or, you know, you were given help. And she was like, well, yes, I was admitted for 4 months. But, and I just felt like he was sort of, I don't know, like being really kind of disrespectful towards her. Like, then she had to say that personal information. Whereas, yeah, okay, maybe she had some help, but she was still forced to, you know, given Ativan and then...
I found all of that like really relatable though too, because it was kind of the same like with my Ativan experience, where the doctor I was seeing was just giving me more and more as I would report my symptoms and stuff, and then started talking about switching me to Klonopin instead. And that's when I looked everything up and found the information, just like she just happened upon the information. Then I was like, oh, I don't want to switch to Klonopin. I don't want to increase my Ativan anymore. I want to get off of this stuff. But I had to switch doctors too. You know, like I couldn't do it with the same doctor that I was with because they weren't supportive. I think people get really like defensive of their practice, like doctors, you know, and they don't want to, because like having to help you with it then is having to admit that they did something to you that harmed you.
100%. That is exactly it. And I think if you're working with someone that's constantly like, well, it's your anxiety, it's your issues, you're not gonna be able to cope, you have these problems, it's like, you know, you end up thinking, it's me.
When I started the Ativan, it was literally forced on me. It wasn't even like this woman where I took in a pill. It was given to me through an IV in the hospital, like multiple times. And then they started giving it to me in a pill instead. And then like, you know, like I went to a psychiatrist to manage that pill after a time. So it was just, there were so many different people's hands in it. I can't like pin it on one doctor, but like I do know for a fact that that last doctor that I saw understood what was happening with me and didn't tell me, because she was like, oh, well, we'll switch you to something longer acting. Why would you do that if you're not you know, saying that interdose withdrawal, you know, isn't a thing. Like, of course, like, yeah, you're switching me to something longer acting because you understand interdose withdrawal is what's happening to me right now. It's, and I was never crazy. So, you know, or anything. It was never my mental health. Like, it was my physical health. And.
But these are crimes, in my opinion.
Yeah,
if you are a doctor and you are aware that your patient is intolerant or in benzodiazepine withdrawal or having adverse effects, you've got to tell them. You've got to tell them.
And also, I think when a patient comes in and they are feeling depressed or they have anxiety, not to treat it like it's some sort of crime and you've got something wrong with you. I think this is like the way that it's treated, like, here's a pill, you've got something wrong with you. Whereas actually, it's just a very human thing.
Yeah.
And we just need love. We need love.
Well, I think the gaslighting is the most painful thing in the process. Mm. When you're so vulnerable and sick and not at your best. I've been called an addict several times. And I was like, I don't know. Yeah. I really want to come off these pills. I don't feel like an addict. And I was prescribed them for something. I thought it was a medication. And all of a sudden, I'm an addict. Like,
right.
It's, and you know, these pills make you look like an addict. Like, I lost so much weight and I've still got these like weird, like hollow, like these dark circles around my eyes here. And I never had them before. I've got no makeup on at the moment, but like, it's like they make you look so unwell.
Yeah.
And like, I genuinely look like some sort of heroin addict.
I didn't know at first because I was prescribed something. I think it's related to Ativan. My first drug was called lormitazepam. And I was like really working out and I had lost a lot of weight and I kind of like reached a plateau where I was kind of stuck. And I was like, well, you know, maybe it'll take a few more months for me to lose weight. But then on the lormitazepam, I was super skinny. I was like skin and bones. And I thought, oh, this is good because I'm working out. It's finally taken, you know, hold. I did not know. I was basically super sick because of the benzodiazepine. I never related the two.
Yeah, nor did I. And when I look back at all the videos I was making, I was like, wow, I look so thin. And no one around me said anything about it. I was just like, what the hell? Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that I like in the sense of Mrs. N is that she saw a TV show. And I think it's so important for all of us and people within the benzo community to do something. Like Haley's got her Instagram page. You know, who knows? Someone will see that and be like, oh, this is a thing. Maybe it'll inspire someone. You're making your documentary. You got a website, Emma, and you've got your podcast. Mm-hmm. And I've got my podcast. I think it's so important that we leave just little breadcrumbs and things all over the internet. Definitely. So that people will, whatever people will run into, because I ran into a book. Yeah. My first thing was a book called The Benzo Book. And I was like, there's a book on this? There's a book on this? That's the first. And in the book, I read about the Astra Manual. And then I found. So it's very, everyone doing something is saving lives, in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah.
I think so too.
I started the benzo page for me that I started is just for people who are on benzos or whatever to raise awareness, though. It was a really big, big decision for me because there is like this concept or like this like perception that like you're an addict or whatever. I had to kind of struggle with it, but decided to share publicly on like my personal pages. So like my personal Instagram and my personal Facebook and stuff. And then even like my husband's got multiple podcasts. So like doing this podcast the first time with Naftal, we shared that and he's got a fairly big platform and everybody wants to be nosy about like our lives. We generally don't share a lot about our lives. So like, I think it got out to a lot of people and I've had like a lot of people that listen to his stuff, like tell me, you know, like, oh yeah, that happened to me too. You know, like I've been good for 5 years now or whatever. And I'm just like, it's amazing how many people have kind of come out of the woodwork and been like, I've been through that too. I've been through that too. And they never said anything. And I'm like, I wish you would have fucking said something, please. So I was like, I don't want to be the person who doesn't say something and then tell someone later, like, oh yeah, I went through that too. And then have them think the same thing of me. Like, why didn't you just give me a fucking heads up? So everywhere I can,
definitely.
I guess is like, I try and give that heads up. And I've had other people contact me that have been like, oh yeah, my doctor prescribed me this benzo for, you know, whatever. And I asked the pharmacist about it and everything too. And they kind of backed up everything you said. So I decided not to take it. And I was like, God, win, you know, like such a win. Like every time I hear that story.
So, it is a win. Yeah. I had my first win, not benzotiazepine related. It's a long story, but basically I got treatment for tinnitus with a group of people. It was during the pandemic, so all online and stuff. And this highly educated woman was prescribed benzos and Z drugs for sleep as she was struggling with tinnitus as well. And I was like, don't take it. Don't take it. You know, I almost died. And I told the whole story. Anyway, she was like, I'm going to be careful with taking these drugs because I know about your story. We fast forward a couple of months later, she calls me and she's getting special treatment in Belgium because she was like on a quest to get rid of her tinnitus. I know that it's impossible or just very unlikely to be cured of tinnitus. It's just a condition that you're going to have to live with. But she was telling me, yeah, I've got all this list. I've got a list of antidepressants and all these other drugs and they're supposed to do a chemical reset or whatever. I'm like, what? I was like, what drugs are you on? And then she mentions Rivotril. And I'm like, I know that one. Isn't that clonazepam? And it was. Oh, I was like, that is like the worst benzo I think there's out there. Yeah. So please stop. But she was instructed to be taking it for 2 months straight. It's like, please don't, please don't. And then we met for lunch like 2 weeks later. And she had fallen off the stairs. She had broken her foot. And she was in such a state that she was, I think the drugs are fucking me up, so I'm just going to quit. But they told her she was going to get some guidance with the taper. And guess what the taper was? Cut the pill in half.
One half, yeah.
but she got, I mean, I think I kind of helped save her from a benzo journey. But I also realized that because she's never been to the point that she got so sick, she'll never know what I saved her of.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's the you thing.
Like, I've said it a million times. Like, you can't. There's no word to describe this. If there's a word to describe this and they could put it in that side effects warning that could accurately convey this, no one would take it. Not a single person would ever take it. If they, but there is no, like they just use these bland terms like anxiety, you know, and whatever. And it doesn't encompass what you actually feel. And that's what that fucking Professor Thomas or whatever with his like, this is like an addict or whatever, and this is a satisfied user. And like, and compared to just smoking and alcohol. And I was like, so are you telling me then that the person who cannot go a day without drinking alcohol is a satisfied user and not an addict?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, because that's what he's saying about this woman next to him. Cannot go a day without this pill. She's a satisfied user. But like, but if you told me you couldn't go a day without a drink, you would be called an alcoholic, not a satisfied user. A satisfied user is somebody that can have a drink one day and not have a drink for a week, you know, like have one when they go out in front. That's a satisfied user, right?
Right.
And an alcoholic is someone who cannot go a day without it. And so like, he's like comparing these things. And it was just mind blowing to me that like, he's comparing them and not even understanding that like what he's saying is just like, it just was so obvious to me that it was like so wrong. Like just so wrong.
I think everyone, like all the other people at the table were like, when that you could, there was like a tension.
Yeah.
Like people were trying to like kind of, you know, interject the woman who was like hosting the show. She was just like, and so let's just try to get him to stop talking.
Yeah.
and what I found really interesting with Sonia, you know, the host, was really like, okay, this camp is saying this and this camp is saying that. Like, what is this now? Like, you know, what's going on here? So I think
she was definitely like not on Thomas's side.
I felt like she wasn't really on anyone's side. I think like it must have been a tough place for her because, like, what the heck does she know? You know, like she's just doing this talk show, you know, and like there's no internet to get this information or anything yet, really.
Right.
Like I was joking. I was like 2002. Mm. Like I was still doing instant messenger, like with my friends and stuff. Like there wasn't like MySpace yet. There was nothing. There was no place. Like there's chat rooms on AOL and stuff. And that was about it. So like, where are you going to get this information?
Yeah, right. That's so true. Mm.
Yeah, I think she has to be neutral, I think, as a host.
That's
Yeah, she has to be neutral. But I think she was very much with Dr. B, you know, I think she was very much with Dr. B. Also, what I liked about Sonia was like, but we've got a problem here. There's people, you know, that want to come off, and, you know, we have, she was very clear about, we have a situation. How do these people come off? Mm-hmm. You know, right.
Exactly. Like, hello.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and apparently back in 2002, when this was recorded somewhere in my country, in the Netherlands, there was a facility that you could go to. I don't think it exists anymore. But something else that kind of shocked me was the numbers then were 700,000 people on benzodiazepines. I got data from last year, which states about 1.4 million of the 17 or 18 million Dutchies are on them. And that are the official kind of records, because you can just buy them online as well.
Wow. How many people are in the country?
About 18. We somewhere between 17 and 18. But, you know, we've had the war. We've had a lot of Ukrainians coming over here. Lots of immigrants. So about 18 million.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. I haven't looked up how many in the U.S. because we've got like 300 something million. I don't remember how many, but... That's a lot for a population of 18 million. That includes kids and everything, right? You know,
Belgium is
so how many adults then does that mean are on these drugs? That's crazy.
Belgium is 1 in 5 people. 1 in 5. It's worse there even.
Wow.
I mean, I really relate what you were saying, Haley, earlier about, you know, people thinking that you're an addict. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because recently I've got my personal Instagram. And then I've also got my Beating the Benzo Instagram. And I was posting on my personal Instagram. But then I was like, it's this thing of I've archived some of the things because people do judge. And I think because, again, it's not widely known. And I think I can't wait for the day that this is all widely known, because you're talking about all these people, there's so many people going through this right now, and and the doc, it's madness. And it's like I'm here thinking, oh, I shouldn't be sharing this because people are going to judge me, but it's actually happening. And it's like, it's so frustrating, because so many of my friends and family are just quite dismissive about it, really, because they've never gone through it. It's like this weird thing with medication, like people don't seem to want to care.
Yeah. I've had some like pushback from people who are really like invested in taking their psych meds, you know. Mm-hmm. But I am blessed with the ability to give no fucks, so I still say what I said. Like, you know, I said what I said, and like I'm usually right, so I usually come with like data to back me up, kind of thing, like not just like my own personal experience, so that helps. And but like you're saying, like, oh, like this will be more widely known, this will be more widely known. But I do know, I believe you were on like the Ada versus Ativan one that was in the 80s. And this research started in like the 1950s, 60s. So like, unless I say something, how the fuck is it going to be more widely known? Because it's been decades that we've known this, and it is not widely known yet. Like, and like, I think it's getting worse since the whole chemical imbalance theory of psychiatry came along. Like I said, like so many people are so much more invested in their meds now. And like, oh my God, like don't say anything harsh or like negative about anybody's psych meds, you know, because it could like, I don't know, like hurt them somehow, you know. But then I see so many people ending up on like 5, 6, 7 meds at a time, you know, one thing to control this, one thing to control that. And it's just like, I don't know who's hurting and who's helping. Am I really hurting by saying like, hey, this shit happened to me, and like, I'm getting better, you know, by getting rid of it. Like, is that really it's not harmful, just or like... is it like the people who are downplaying the side effects and like the withdrawal syndromes and stuff that can happen, are they being more harmful? Yeah, and I would argue that they're being more harmful.
Definitely. And there was that recent, there was that very recent documentary that came out in the UK. And I was speaking to Mark Horowitz about this, because obviously he's been struggling with antidepressants. So it is across the board. Like, it's not just benzodiazepines. It's like antidepressants, antipsychotics, all of them come with horrendousness. And it was interesting, because after this documentary, on the documentary, it said, only the minority, like very small amount of people, are harmed by these medications. Yeah. They help most people. Mm-hmm. And I emailed Mark and I was like, Mark, you did really well, but it says this. And he was like, I know. He was like, it's actually more half of people trying to taking an antidepressant will have a very negative experience. But they still, on a BBC documentary that just came out like 2 weeks ago, was saying that it was only a minority, like a small amount of people that will be affected.
Well, yeah, I feel so like it's up. This like enforced, like weird political correct thing that we have yes. to say now. Like we have to like kowtow to these like drugs and how they're life-saving. That's the thing that comes up. They're life-saving. Exactly. And I'm just like, but what about me? Like I almost didn't have a life anymore because of them.
Right.
They were almost exactly. life-ending for yeah. me. So like, there's, doesn't that yeah. matter too? Like, yeah. shouldn't yeah, we do talk we not about matter? That?
There's a few not. Things yeah. that I want to say about that too. First of all, in terms of pushback, I've been very lucky. I haven't had like bad things written or sent or whatever. I did like cancel my benzo tired page for Instagram because it's just, you know, people that are very desperate are going to like ask for help. And I'm like, you know, yeah. I'm in withdrawal myself. If you want help, listen to my podcast series, and there's plenty of benzo coaches. So it's just basically managing my impulses and, you know, trying to put energy wherever. But in terms of all of these documentaries, there's a lot that I want to say on this. Like, I think, you know, overall, we should be able to find some consensus because we've got people saying, oh, they're helping people, and they're other people saying, and which is true, it's killing me, or it's done a lot of harm. But what I'm missing, for example, in the UK, the BBC documentary, is that the reality of this is once people do want to come off, once they choose that, there is no place for them to go.
Right.
That is, I think we could have consensus. So we can all say, okay, maybe it helps for some people, maybe it doesn't. We yeah. know better. We yeah. know better. But let's say, where can we find, you know, people, where could we all possibly agree on? And that is that we have no facilities that, you know, let's say it's 50%.
Well, you don't even, like, being beyond not having a facility, you don't even have, like, informed physicians. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. even with the antidepressants and stuff, they'll tell you the same thing. Cut your dose in half.
Yeah.
For a week. Yeah. Cut it in half again the next week. You know, like, and then you're supposed to be off of this stuff in a month. And then yeah. I know people who like are on like Zoloft and stuff, like counting out like little beads and everything. Like
that is another problem.
For years, you know, like some of these are much more, they have much higher like likelihood of withdrawal syndromes than others. It's kind of the same with the benzos, right? Like we're just like, oh God, like Klonopin's the worst, you know, and like Valium's kind of the easiest, but like they all suck though.
They all suck.
They all suck to get off of.
And none of the benzos and none of the antipsychotics and none of the antidepressants have the dosages available to us to taper right. like really, really slowly. We right. all have to do the beads, the water titration, the weighing, yep. the shape, whatever. It's fucked up and that needs to change.
Yes.
I mean, there's a
yes.
lot of things that need to change, but yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, like maybe I should believe that there's a God or something, because like there happened to be like a benzo doctor within an hour's drive of me that could like actually walk me through and like help me through a real taper. Like I'm not getting the same like amount and like sneaking tapering it behind my doctor's back or anything. I don't have to lie to anyone, which is what I did before. I was lying to my doctor, like everything's fine, everything's great, you know, so they wouldn't increase my dose again. And with him, like I'm just like, well, I feel like I could go to like a micro taper now and do a liquid taper. He knows it, you know, like, and he understands this is his entire practice is getting people off of psych meds. He's a psychiatrist and that's what he does. And I was like looking around and there are like none of those. There's, I think, in the entirety of the US, like 5. And like one of them happens to live near me. Yeah. That like really, really like dedicate like their practices and really, really understand what they're doing. So that's another reason, like he's older and stuff. And I'm like, God, what happens when he's gone? What happens to everyone that would have needed him when he's gone? Like, so I do think like, God, I wish there was like some way I could just like buy a billboard or something everywhere to like like really warn people, because yeah, because there is not a lot of help for any of these meds to get off of them. So like No. That's true. Be aware of that before you get on them. Like, you should be warned.
Yeah, there's no help.
There's no help. There's only, actually, for me personally, and this applies to a lot of other people that I know and their stories, they made it worse.
Yes.
I came in like,
most of the doctors are this Dr. Thomas guy. Most doctors out there are him. Most of them are not Dr. B.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah, totally.
Even the addiction specialists are not Dr. B. Like, in most places, they'll try and detox you and stuff, not taper you. So most of them are not her. Most of them are.
I had several Thomases in my journey.
Yep.
Several. Yeah. All of them, pretty much. Yeah.
And there was one other thing that I wanted to mention about the TV show, where, because I'm just so inspired or just happy that Mrs. N got inspired by a TV show. And that's why I really feel like TV shows like this, documentaries like Ada V. Anavan. I don't really want to talk about the Netflix Xanax thing. I thought it was too glossy and kind of.
I was a little disappointed in the Netflix.
Me too. But I think there just needs to be more media attention. And as far as I'm concerned, we can have like the severe Ada V. Anavan kind of documentaries.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think we need more of them.
Yeah.
I think people need to peek behind the curtain of like what this is really like. But I think, you know, like the podcast that you're doing is doing that. And podcasts are incredibly popular. Yes. And your documentary, which I cannot wait to see.
And your song.
My song. So yeah, these two things. I was actually with the couple that are making the documentary with me last night, and they were like, we're going to get it finished by the end of the year. It's happening. We were having a good discussion about it. So that feels really positive, because they are going to show like the absolute brutality of this. Like, it's not glossy by any means.
Good.
So
it's not like that. Oh, but it's some of these there's people's lives. Yeah. Like at the end.
No, it's like, no. No.
Yeah.
It's all no.
Definitely. Okay. So in terms of times, I'm going to have to go towards the wrapping up of the show. Emma, sure, do you have any other notes for the TV show that you wanted to share, or are you good?
I went through all of my notes, so I'm all good.
So I think I've been through all of my thoughts. I think it's just, again, shocking. Another thing in another country, like, this has been discussed and again ignored.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my main takeaway from this.
Yeah. We'll keep talking and keep being ignored, but one or two people won't ignore you. So, like,
exactly.
Every time it's worth it. Every drop in the bucket counts. Yeah.
Definitely.
So true. Thank you. So true.
Thank you both for coming on.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And we'll be in touch.
For sure.
Lovely talking with you guys.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.